This is John McGuire, and you are listening to Always Record, episode 164 with Ben Garay. Staying up pretty late for me.
Yeah, that's a little past my bedtime for typical, but I mean, it's all right.
Well, what time are you getting up in the morning?
I get up around about 7:30.
Okay.
I hit snooze a couple times, but I mean, that's irrelevant, really.
It is, but yeah. I don't, whatever. I appreciate you finding some time on a weekday.
Yeah, I appreciate you getting me into the Skype world. It's about time.
You haven't done this before?
No, never at all, actually. I'm really bad at technology. It's starting to really disable me and inhibit me in a lot of different ways. It's like you've seen how bad I am at getting back with messages and stuff. I don't even keep a ringer on my phone or any of the current versions of the apps installed. I see messages whenever I check messages and
I'm a ghost. You actually are quite prudent, and you check regularly compared to me. So much respect, because it didn't take more than a day for you to get back.
Yeah.
I appreciate.
Yeah, man.
But you're not alone. Yeah, we're not all technophobes, and we don't all know what we're doing with it. I have this very sophisticated phone that my family got me as a gift, and it's like a monkey tapping on the monolith. I know how to get on the internet, which is what I've known how to do for a long time.
Yeah,
that's about it, and use like a couple Facebook apps, I guess.
I'm the exact same way. I use like a couple of megs of data a month. I never keep my data on. I don't use it ever when I'm out, only when I'm in Wi-Fi, and only to look stuff up when I can't remember, like, you know, who was in that movie. I'll go on IMDb or something, but
yeah, it has good sync value.
Yeah.
It has good sync value, and it has been useful just for, I mean, whatever. Having the internet at the touch of your fingertips is always useful, period. And so, yeah, I see the benefit of the technology. I do appreciate it in certain ways, and it's given me access to other, like, even picture messaging and stuff. That's really cool. That's a really cool time to be alive that people can do that, or, like, video call like this. The drop of a hat, which in the 50s was considered, oh my fucking God, are you kidding me? It's just absurd. Or even the 60s and 70s, it wasn't even conceived of. Well, it was conceived of, but not just thought impossible. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to live in little parts of the future.
Yeah, for sure.
Do I sound much different over the phone than I do in person?
Not too much. Although I'm used to listening to you on the radio too. So
fair enough. Okay.
I hear that voice. But it's awkward to me because I'm just like talking into a screen. I'm not talking into like a headset, or I'm not trusting the microphone in my computer. It's weird.
I know. It's not, and not having that face to face, especially if you are that kind of person. And usually I'm not. It's here I am speaking about the value of human interaction. I barely interact with anybody, but having someone in front of you and reading body language and just making eye contact from time to time, if that doesn't frighten you, is really quite nice and actually part of a rhythm that if you're an artist, which you are, you must appreciate that contact and the way that adds to a dynamic or a conversation.
Oh, definitely. I mean, seeing you face-to-face and Ali, I mean, it made me want to, you know, get in touch with you right now. Chop it up to you at a distance, for sure.
Yeah, so again, anyone that's listening that doesn't know, Ben and I got to meet in Olympia, which was a really great get-together, and it was my first time going to Olympia, even though it was the second Sync Summit, and I was able to go to the Boise Summit this year, too, so I did the full spectrum of Sync events, and it was really cool to see people face-to-face and to get a sense of their presence, and be able to bring that into future discussions, Not that I've been out there that much and having many discussions, but when I do, it's or just with thinking of people, you know, it adds value to having that concrete experience.
Yeah, I've been tripping off of David's Jack of Hearts ever since. I mean, I've been thinking about it nonstop, really.
Yeah, so that Always Record is up now. Did you get a chance to listen to it again?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's weird the different layers of being in it and then listening to the critique of it. Thinking about all the things I wanted to say in the moment while I was watching the movie, and then after the critique of it, having to, like, say my immediate thoughts. And then after listening to it for another, or thinking about it for another week or so, and then re-listening to the Always Record, it was like I had already thought so much deeper past what, like, the observations were.
So for anyone that's not listening, because this is, Alan and I were just talking about this today in regards to movies and, like, something like this, is if someone hasn't seen the movie, can they appreciate what the fuck we're talking about? And so maybe a decent point to start is, do you want to just give, like, a really brief synopsis? Again, there was no volume, so we're not sure what we were seeing, but we can give some sort of assessment of, like, what this person's journey was and what he was going through. And maybe you could set that up before you get into what you saw in it on various levels, whichever level you want to dig into.
Well, just at the summit, David premiered a film for us that was, I had never seen any of the source content. I guess it was Knight of Cups with Christian Bale, and they had a soundtrack of a couple of Doors albums, L.A. Woman and American Prayer. Like, being totally foreign to all the content, it was just so interesting, because, like, the L.A. Woman is, like, Law O' Man, and it has this, like, masculine-feminine dichotomy and natural and artificial dichotomy. And just from the opening screenshot of that Law O' Man in L.A. Woman, like, my initial impression, that was my only impression coming in. Like, maybe other people knew, well, I don't know what anybody knew coming into it, but once it started, I knew I never saw the movie. And, like, I had no other prior context of the lyrics or anything. And it was just hitting me so hard with just the, because I'm hung up on the dichotomies to begin with. Like, Janis type, like, you know, front to back, night to, you know, day and night. And it's like, I can't even go back through it right now.
Okay, well, before getting into the specifics, I can definitely just rattle on about dichotomies.
It's crazy talking to you right now, because it's so, like, formal, and it's I don't know.
you know what I'm saying? Well, it isn't, because, I mean, the thing is, it's just, we're always kind of talking about the same shit. And honestly, this is, in a way, yeah, it's hard for me not to have someone in front of me, but also this is kind of my comfort zone. So I promise you I'll drag you along and we'll get more comfortable, because I'm not that uptight. But it is a little weird going from one to the other. Absolutely. It's absolutely a little strange. How could it not be? If you're really present in your reality and you're really respecting the reality, it is weird. Like, this is weird. It's fucking strange. Like, we're on the edge of history or something, experiencing the edge of what humans can do. That makes no sense. Like, we shouldn't even exist. I think Alex Fulton said, living is a synchronicity. It absolutely is. I understand what he was saying more and more every single day.
Yeah.
And at first I just thought, oh, that's a nice truism, but it's just like, oh, that's fucking everything.
Yeah.
But, like, dichotomies, so it's just...
Yeah, no, I guess you have to see the whole film. Like, it's so trippy even trying to talk about one of David's films, but it's, like, I guess having the momentum of watching... Like, I was trying to say in the beginning, like, it's one thing to sit in the crowd and observe the film being played and then be able to say your initial thoughts right away. And then, like, having to think about it for a week, it gets, like, deeper and even more, like, lost in what the context even was. So then to come back and try to revisit it and try to tie it back in, it's like, like, you almost have to watch it again to be able to talk about it coherently, because it's like to bring in any one nuance right now is like, it's kind of hard for me to even make a reference, like, unless I'm describing like a play by play for people and how things tie in, and it's
sure,
it's tricky to even do.
Sure.
But I probably shouldn't even.
So, well, this is what I can do. This is what I can do to set it up real quick. And as far as my, just, I'm good at empirically seeing what's in front of me and sort of barfing it back. So it's just this dude basically meeting up with all his lovers throughout the film. And of course there's some interludes, and it's basically him wandering. So he's wandering and meeting up with these women. I don't think he has a... Does he have a male lover? That's implied, right? That he has maybe one male lover. Did you get that sense? Because Misty Greer got that sense, but I didn't hear anyone else talking.
Maybe. There may have been some weird stuff going on with the older men. Because there was some weird power stuff going on with, like, the old guys in the top of the tower. And, like, he kept trying to go to the top, and, like, it's like he didn't know what it took to be up there. Like, I don't know if it was a youth thing or if it was, like, he was never fully committed to wanting to go to the top or something.
Yeah, to me it was disillusionment. Like, he seemed like a very disillusioned character that still had his spirit was still like yearning, though. He hadn't totally given up, right? So he was, I don't know. He was clearly a split personality, but maybe recognized the situation more than others.
And it was only relevant in the context of the music that was playing to me, because I hadn't seen the movie. And it's so hard even talking about. I probably shouldn't even have went down this road to start, because it's like, that was my favorite thing about it, and I want to talk about it, but I wasn't really prepared, like, mentally disciplined enough, really, to go into that subject matter, I suppose.
Fair enough. But because things sometimes just, like you said, they sink into you. And in that sense, they're part of your unconscious. And when that happens, everyone knows when you wake up and you forget your dream, it's impossible to get out. Right? So these things can feel like waking dreams, and they can settle into you like waking dreams, or sink into you, like you use that word. And it's just,
I've been listening to the albums, like, on their own, and, like, the imagery and the scenery from the movies are coming up and resyncing with those tracks. And I want to rewatch the movie by itself to get that initial, like, what the root material is for that. And it's like in those ways it comes back to me. I guess in that way I've been living it, like, since Ali, really, because LA Woman, I've been trying to get familiar with that, because I have no prior exposure to any music from that era. Whenever anybody's talking about anything classic rock or anything, it's like totally off my radar.
Ditto. A lot of people understand the Doors and rightfully acknowledge the Doors as great music, and they probably are. I haven't experienced them enough myself to say that definitively, but what I have been exposed to and how David exposed me to it, it was great. It was really, really great. And when David was on stage for Radio 8 Ball, his quote was, "Why do you throw the jack of hearts away?" And that was, you know, that appeared right early in the film, and so that was, like, fun, that he was, like, laying the groundwork for it, and as a good magician does, right, and kind of his misdirection and Gonzo-like persona. So I appreciated the lead into it. That was really fun, and it was just, it was a great experience, and it is hard to describe, but I think he's posting it soon if he hasn't already, so anyone can watch it themselves if they have some time. They can even skip around. It's anything. It's however you want to experience it. Maybe open it up and see it, because it was really a great effort by David and a good experience for everybody.
For sure. For sure.
So, Olympia, would you give it your thumbs
up? Oh, I'd give it a big thumbs up, man. It was a great time. It's almost like, I wouldn't say depressing, but it's like, you're coming back here and, I don't know, it's hard to describe. Because I'm pretty isolated and antisocial as it is. And it's like, to be able to connect with people and be in the West Coast is a totally different environment, you know, legally and things.
Well, yeah, you can smoke weed there.
Yeah, it's really great. And just be open and pretty much, you know, just like natural. And then coming back to a more repressed, or I feel repressed, sadly, you know, repressed and oppressed in my whole, like, environment that I'm in, right? Like, you know, like, it's hard to even talk to you after, like, being back home. It's weird.
It's a bit of a crash. It's like a lot of intense emotional experiences. That's a spectrum, and you can live something for just a few days, and it can stay with you for a while. And just you don't even know what you're working through, but you're working, and it just you have to sit with it because you don't even know how to think about it, and it really sucks sometimes. even though, of course, you wouldn't give it up for anything because it was like a great experience, and it's like you take a lot with you and take back with you. But yeah, it reminds you of like where you are and maybe what you don't. Like, love about everything around you. And I get that too. Like, even coming back to a place I want to be, it's like, I still see things. It's like, oh, I miss that camaraderie and I miss those regular conversations. Mm-hmm. And the sense of isolation is bad. It's horrible. And it's dangerous to all of us, really. Cause it's like, I think all of us are really susceptible to that. Maybe obviously not all the same, but it's a similar disease for sure.
Because I feel like I'm kind of trapped in that, like, structural setting. Like, that, going to vacate, I mean, a vacation is literally, like, vacating. It's like escapism. And it's like to go for an amusement purpose and wind up in an amusement park or something, maybe you can come back and feel kind of, you know, rejuvenated and, okay, back to normal life. But, like, to have, like, the whole point of the vacation to be, to meet up with, like, the true natural state with, like, people truly, like, vibing and, I mean, you can't recreate it. Like, I'm struggling now to even, like, reference it because it's happened and that was it. It was, like, a magical sort of time. But, like, to come back from that and to realize, like, you know, that could be, like, more often, like, it actually should be what life's all about. It's like, why the hell am I not doing it more often? Why is, like, everybody I know basically, like, not pursuing that? Just the more, not, I don't know, not some sort of, like, kumbaya tree-hugging natural moment. Not that there's anything wrong with that if you want to do that. You know, but
right.
You know, it's just advocating for people to do what comes, like, creatively and productively. And, I mean, we were kicking around some true creative ideas and some really true connections going on. And then, I mean, I come back around here and I try to hold a door for somebody or just pass somebody in the hallway. And it's just like, you know, how many feet do I have to endure approach, you know, like trying to avoid like eye contact or saying anything to each other. And it's just like,
yeah.
It's like, man, you know, we're all in this together, this hostage situation they got us in, you know, it's like...
It is a fucking Stockholm Syndrome situation, total hostage situation, and it's like no one, but it's like we're all keeping each other prisoner. It's this huge, bizarre thing. Matrix.
Yeah, I just call it Jonestown, man. Like, like it goes down to my radio 8-ball question was, you know, will it actually come down to drinking the Kool-Aid? I was privileged enough to ask a question to the Pop Oracle, and I mean, it's crazy because I mean the answer was prophetic, as I would expect nothing less. It was what's the big idea?
So I had stepped out for a drink because it was pretty hot.
Yeah, it was.
it was a great show, but it was kind of warm, so people were filtering it out. And at that moment, like, what happened was, I'm like, okay, we got a break, so I'll sneak out. I think my question got pulled, and not that I would have even gotten on stage because, like, my name wasn't on it, but I wasn't there to claim it, and my name wasn't on it. So I was kind of glad because, honestly, I didn't want it.
He was looking for the guy who didn't have the name on it.
Yeah. And I apologize to Andreas for that. But I am the guilty party.
Okay.
I'm out in the open, just like, so no one has to be scapegoated.
I see.
But I was so happy that you got picked, and it's like, you're definitely the person I would have wanted to go on stage. Like,
yeah, I had a feeling I was going to get picked, and my question was kind of like a smart ass. It wasn't like, I mean, it was a serious question for sure, but I mean, I was trying to be hardcore and provocative on purpose.
I do wonder, like, what will it take, or what will it boil down to? Because it does seem like we're heading off a cliff in so many ways. But it's like, well, where does the cliff fall into? Is it just an abyss, or is there a bottom, and what's at the bottom for the survivors and so on?
I don't know. It could go so many different ways, but no, I don't see a good way, really, that it's going to go at this point.
Well, not in our country. I think the rest of the world, certain parts of the world will be fine, because they're smarter and like you said, less Stockholm syndrome and less prisoner, intellectually captured. So other people have a chance, but I think this country, it's like, we're going to be at the bottom of the barrel and deserve it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can only talk to so many people that are either, like, willfully disengaged, and they're like, oh, I don't pay attention to that, like it's a trophy or something. Or people that, like, will stick to the false dichotomy of, like, you know, Democrat or Republican. I don't like either of them, but I gotta vote for whoever. And it's like, people know we've been in this situation for a long time. And I have some sympathy, because, like, it is sort of like a hostage situation, but it's more like Jonestown. It's more like, I mean, we do still have free will, and we do still have a lot of freedoms, and it's just like, we'd rather give the responsibilities, some executive, some figurehead, some cult of personality, and, like, we all know better, but it's, I don't know, democracy is a weird thing, because, like, it is a republic, too, so we do have a figurehead, and we do have representation of a government, but, like, it's the quality of the people to hold accountability. It's like, how does Hillary Clinton get away with all this shit? It's like, everybody knows. Everybody's just so, they know it's like a murder squad. And if they, like, from the attorney generals to the sheriffs, I mean, I don't know how much you looked into, like, how the Clintons got their power or whatever, but it's like, it's known. It's a known hostage. It's hostage slash Jonestown. It's not pure Jonestown. But.
No, it's a, That's its strength, is it can remain ambiguous, and no one can label it perfectly, and so therefore everyone can argue about what it really is, even though the evidence is right in front of our eyes, it's in our lives, it's in our bones, because we're so anxious and so fearful. The problem is, like you said, the problem isn't information anymore, it's the quality of people, and the quality of, like, our courage, and our trust of each other, because we'd have zero trust, so we don't think we can rely on each other. We don't trust ourselves, so we don't think we can rely on ourselves. And so it's this horrible, you're in a state between fight and flight that you can't pick, because either one is, you feel doomed. And so you stay in this middle ground that your just nervous system wants to explode, because it's just, it's not made to do that. It's not made to be in that state for so long. And that's why we have all kinds of weird disorders in our society. It's, whoa, where did these come from? Oh, I don't know. It's just like an oddity. No, it's our fucking way of life. It is our way of life, and how all that shit, all that, like, emotional, psychological shit gets trapped in people and makes them sick as fuck. And then, of course, we have chemicals everywhere. Don't get me wrong. It's like, this computer I'm touching is seeping into my blood as I speak. The plastic is not going to leave me for some time. So I'm a toxic thing already. It's like, I don't even want to be buried in the ground. I'm going to be so fucking toxic by the time I'm done. Like, I don't want to do that to the earth. We've done enough to it. Just, like, throw me into the air and hope, like, somehow the wind scatters me to a point where I'm not as, like, dangerous to living creatures.
Yeah, man.
It's fucked.
I feel the exact same way. And that's actually the answer I got from the Pop Oracle. It was, the big idea was the name of the song.
Hmm.
And it was like, what's the big idea? I'm wondering, like, you know, how they're going to administer, you know, the final solution.
Yeah.
You know, in true Reiki and, you know, types of, like, Hitlerian ways. And it's like, what's the big idea? And I mean, it was an overwhelming song, especially in the vent. I wish it was acoustic, because it's the objective is to listen to the lyric. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. But it's interesting, because what got through, it was like the word choke distinctly got through.
Mm.
And you're just screaming, like, the big, what is the big idea, was just the chorus. What's the big idea? And it's like, everybody's wondering, like, what's it going to be? You know, I mean, they're, they got it set up in so many different ways, like economic or, you know, military. It could be a health thing. It could be, you know, an astronomical thing because we aren't progressed far enough to catch it before it happens. Or it's like, it's all set up, and it will take a really courageous population, because every other point in history, masses just succumb to, like, being subjects. And what they're going to subject us to, I don't think it's going to be good. It doesn't have to be that way, but it's just like the quality of, it goes back to the general sense of despair being back around here. I mean, maybe it's just the deindustrialization and just the, you either have a hustle and you're doing it super on point and you're taking care of yourself, or you're like, I don't know, you see just a lot of darkness around here. It's weird.
We're living in like a deindustrialized second world country. The U.S. is not a first world country anymore.
No.
No way. Like, no. Europe is the only first world left. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like other places like that aren't technically, I don't know if they're European or not, but
yeah, I mean,
they're like Iceland, for example. I mean, they got their shit together. I just talked to an Icelandic woman the other day, came into my work. It was a pleasure. It's like, oh, here's a brave person. They managed to fucking kick the banks out of their country because they knew it was a scam and got all the politicians out, and they're riding the boat. And
yeah.
They're not part of the EU. They don't need anything from anyone. And they're like, they trust each other, and they're smart, and they're well-educated, and they're just, it's a liberal place. And no one talks about it here because it's like too dangerous for people to really know about, like, how well other people live.
Yeah.
And how shitty we live. And we live so much better than other people. But the truth is, like, other people's standards of living is so low that that's like not even fair to compare.
Yeah.
It's really not.
And that's just, and like, they're equalizing them out. I mean, you know, they're not keeping up with the maintenance of what made America so great. And I mean, looking at the skill, I mean, I work at a university, not to downplay like the whole state of the education system, you know, but it's just not exactly the caliber that you would want to see in terms of competence and diligence and whatever metric you want to, you know, apply to this generation.
Yeah, I mean, well, because people can advance and like sort of survive by just subjecting themselves to arbitrary authority.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they get a paycheck, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the trickle down, you know, somebody's going to take care of it. But no, truth is, we're being looted, and we know we're being looted. So it's like, somebody's got to do something about that. But like that, you know, it's like, you know, looking up, oh, somebody's got to call 911. It's like, well, you know, somebody else will call 911. It's like, well, it's a little more serious than that at this point. It's like we all know, and it's like, oh, what do we do about it? And it's like, well, I don't know, but we know it's incumbent on us to do something about it. And it's kind of like, so we got to get our game up, because I know the control structure goes 24/7, all year round. Like, they don't really have anything sacred, so they just go all year round. And
tire people out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a war of attrition for sure. Yeah.
Wait. I mean, look at all like the net neutrality stuff and like the legislation that's constantly trying to attack that. And it's just like, everyone was so happy when that was the first time. Like, oh, we defeated the corporations that want to take over the internet. Ah. And then like a month later, it's back on the fucking table and everyone's signing the same petitions. Like, please stop. Please stop. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? This is going to get passed within a year. And it's like, this shit always gets through. It always does, because it never sleeps. And so the question is, like, what are we doing in our own fucking backyard? Because you're not going to change shit on the federal level. I'm sorry. That's the truth of the matter. And if you believe that, you are naive.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that there's nothing happening at the federal level, that things don't impact people's lives. I don't know. It's just like, it's too bought and paid for. It's too tightly controlled, and like, people don't have enough control over it. Unless, you know, we had like Occupy Wall Street. Why didn't those people go Occupy Washington? Go set up buildings where these people actually need to conduct their business and stop them from conducting business.
Yeah.
What are you stopping the Wall Street people from doing? Nothing. They're still getting their buildings. They can work from home on their fucking computers if they wanted. Are you kidding me? It's like so harebrained, and I'm so pissed.
Yeah.
And I'm so impressed with like the actual organization and in people power that went into getting all those people there. But I question, like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
Because
it's
so obvious. It's so obvious. Call for campaign finance is, like, one of the first things we need, and occupy the buildings they live in and need to conduct business in. Let them run away to some private island and make that public and, like, make that a story that, look at all the politicians are leaving Washington to have a meeting behind the people's back. Do whatever. It's like, I don't care. It, like, force them to do something or have them mace everybody.
Yeah.
Make them mace everybody and show everybody that if you just, like, if even if hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of people, like, show up, they're still going to just, like, mace you because they don't want to deal with, like, real complaints. They just pretend it's not there. So that would eventually keep pissing people off, and that's what we need. But we need people to keep sacrificing. And I know I'm not. I know I'm not. I'm working on myself, personally speaking. So I don't mean to go off and tell everyone what they should be doing. I'm saying it's like, if you are part of a movement, like, take my criticism seriously. That it's like, what are you doing to impact the system, really? Like, what pressure points are you hitting on? This is an academic question. It's not even like, what am I doing? What are you doing? It's like, if we want to do something, what do we fucking do?
Yeah.
And that's something we should do and should have been done, period.
And you just hit on a great point that I think they use against us a lot, too, is, like, you pointed out that, like, oh, well, I'm not doing much of myself, you know, don't get me wrong. And I mean, that's, everybody can say that, you know, so everybody feels this sense of hypocrisy whenever we expect something better out of ourselves or somebody else. It's like, what do you mean? I mean, look at you, you fall short. And it's like, everybody's going to be fallible like that. And like, I know what you mean. People should be doing more. I should be doing more. I mean, we should, but I mean, being preoccupied with the battle is part of the battle. It's like, I'd be doing more if there was more actionable stuff, but like, we're still in strategy mode because I'm not going to go. I mean, I fought my fair share of uphill battles and it's like so futile. It's like the culture is not even ripe for what we need to happen. And
right.
It's crazy because I mean, I don't know, like politically, like you ever get into LaRouche's stuff?
Not too much, but I hear the name thrown around, obviously.
Man, I mean, that's the most on-point stuff that I've found to date. And it's really interesting, especially because, like, when we talk about, like, falling into third world status, it's like, if you look at what's happening in Russia and China right now, and especially China, I mean, they're going back to space and they're going to do shit in space that we've never seen before within the next couple of years. And it's like economically, the science driver projects that are building their economy. Like, it's not just making our slave goods. It's actually building up their nation and their economy. And it's mutually beneficial global programs to do global infrastructure projects. That would be like, instead of war spending, like it's either going to be we destroy the world with war or we build the world up.
Yeah.
And specifically the program that, I mean, they're going with right now and they've been sticking to for a while is reinstating Glass-Steagall, which I don't know if you know much about Glass-Steagall Act, but.
Oh, of course. Yes. I mean, that's what allowed for all the derivative trading and playing with people's investments and whatnot. It's absurd.
Yeah.
So now we're trying to get that back.
Yeah. To put it back in place because
of course it should be in place, but I mean, I don't know if that's how much luck they'll have.
Yeah. I mean, it's supposedly on both parties' platforms, even though neither of the main parties talk about it. It's like at any given time. At any given time, they could decide to put this on us and all of a sudden fix everything like superheroes and start a labor draft instead of a war draft. And, you know, it'd be like, oh, we're going to build America. You know, they could play that card if they want. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that would just simply separate the deposit banks from the investment banks. So they couldn't use our deposits and have us be liable for their bad investments. Which is currently the situation. We have FDIC insurance to some degree, but I mean, there's still a lot of liability on us.
Not when they're playing with trillions of dollars. The fictional economy is so big. There's not enough money to fill the hole.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then, I mean, after that, a national credit bank, because after you wipe out all the bad derivative money by reinstating Glass-Steagall, they want to do a national credit bank. which would, instead of having a debt-based economy, it would be a credit-based economy. And instead of being like a limited monetary supply, the economy would be fueled on credit, because any investment you make in the infrastructure, because that's the next part, is massive infrastructure projects, because not just remedial, but like huge updating in high speed rail and all this like 21st century things that China and other places are doing that we need to be doing. But with a credit bank to be giving out massive infrastructural loans, because any money you pay into infrastructure projects pays back on the loan and some, because of the economic development it creates, not just with like the initial construction workers, but if you build like a high speed rail and have new stops, that's going to develop whole cities, and it's going to, you know, everything, you know, it's
crazy. That's how the suburbs were built, dude, was through trains. Exactly. Like that's the only way suburbs could exist, and it made them possible. It built the world we live in.
Exactly. Yeah. And it essentially gets down to the, because I mean, there's a philosophical component that's woven into the whole LaRouche platform. From what I've looked at, I mean, there's, YouTube's got all sorts of content on there that you can look at. But I mean, it's growth versus decay. It's, are you going to be creative or are you just going to degenerate? And there's a lot of forces. I mean, big, powerful forces, you know, like the British Empire and other forces, Venetian Empire. I mean, it goes all the way back to like the Roman Empire, really, probably before that. But it's like there's a continuity of power that's just like jumped from, you know, domain to domain, but have kept the same philosophy of keep people subject and we will lord over them. It's like a monarchical, like, and there's so many monarchies, it's like an oligarchy of monarchies that want to keep people subject. And America, it's so sad because like America kind of broke away from that theoretically, you know, if we want to believe, you know, they have it so twisted nowadays, right, in revisionist history. It's like, oh, was there ever any make America great again? There was never anything great about America. It's like, the hell there wasn't. And as a matter of fact, like, Americans had slaves. It's like the whole world was slavery until Americans freed slaves, and we had a free slave, you know. We have a free society today, except we use Chinese slaves to use our iPhones and everything else that's made by Chinese slaves.
Right.
And everybody's tweeting their Black Lives Matter on their slave goods. And it's like, it's so grossly hypocritical. It's like, it's, yes, like everybody's got their hands dirty. And at this point, it's like, I think people feel so shameful, and they feel like they're in such a childish, like, state of adolescence. Like, it's been kept this way. They don't do any, you know, the $1 trillion brainwash machine is made to be, you know, we're kept pliable to whatever they want to do to us. It's not like they encourage us to be strong-willed and to go out and develop ourselves. That's like what the alien isolated weirdos do. But like,
and then struggle with the damage, because it really is, when you try to overcome your programming, you find the damage. It hurts, man. It hurts a lot.
Oh, yeah.
To like work through this shit.
Oh, yeah.
And most people don't want to. And I know I don't want to a lot of the time, but when I turn away from it, I realize I'm just like dying inside otherwise. So I'd rather feel the heat, I guess, moving forward than just shrivel up and die or lead some life that I totally don't believe in.
That's exactly
it. It's hard.
That's exactly the battle. I mean, that's the every second of the day battle. And it's like, even like the momentary little blips in the day when it's like you need some coping, so you like go to sweets or whatever. I mean, I'm big into sweets. Yeah, no, it's just like, you know, growth or decay. It's like, it's a whole, in the macro, we have to orient our whole lives towards growth or decay. But in every instance, it's like these decisions, like people are so quick to procrastinate, myself included. Like, putting things, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, or, you know, it's like, well, you can't have the long view macro like you're growing and have the delusion that, like, oh, no, I'm a healthy person and I got a good mindset. Well, in the day by day, it's like, everything's a party, everything's I'll do it tomorrow, everything's somebody else will do it, and it's just like, I feel culturally, I mean, I know some good people. I'm not saying everybody I know are and I think I have some virtues. I'm not saying like everybody's scumbags fall short, but like,
yeah,
but if you measure it against the proportion of what's needed in the caliber yeah. that people, we know human beings are capable to rise to, it's just, you know, we got to do way better. And you try to encourage people to do better, and they get real snappy nowadays. I don't know around your parts, but it's like they're so quick to point to whatever shortcoming you have and tell you, like, well, you can't do it, I can't do it, somebody else will do it. And it's like, listen, I don't have the answer.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have the answer, I know, but, like, we got to get in this mind. I feel like I've been echoing that for, like, over 10 years. It's like if we could day by day, like, try to figure it out. And it's like every time a crisis comes up, it's like, what do we do? It's like, you know, I don't know, but if we continually try to figure it out, but it's like, for some reason, I can never hit the momentum of like figuring out like how to say it right to get my like immediate group of people in a more just aware mindset. It's always like big news when it breaks, and it's like a foregone conclusion to me. It's like, you know. And then people are like, oh, you just need to go somewhere where other people think like you. And it's like, you know, maybe, but, you know, they're going to turn that place into Gaza and they're going to just annihilate it. So,
or it's going to get gentrified and it's going to disappear because it's, I mean, I'm in Portland. That's what's happening here. Yeah. I'm enjoying it while I can, but I realize what's happening. And it's, you know, poor people are getting pushed out.
Yeah.
It's not always going to last. So you can move to... Like, I like it better on the West Coast for sure. I've lived my entire life on the East Coast, and it was, I survived there. It was fine. It's home. But I am happier out here in a lot of ways. But at the same time, it has not solved my problems. Nothing. It's just like, it's been a really tough fucking year and a couple of years for sure. And not just going somewhere else never just like fixes anything. Cause the setting, the true setting is in yourself, even though the set is important.
Yeah.
Like, the set is a critical element of it, but if you're just going somewhere without thinking about like how you're working on yourself, because
yeah,
no, we don't want to like burn ourselves to the ground, but there's just, if anyway, psychology has its problems, man, but it's like, it's also a good compass. It can hurt your creativity, but can also open your eyes to so many things. And it's just, we can be exceptionally weak. I mean, we're programmed to be weak, and it's just, the neuroses is so deep. And so much of it is just like Wilhelm Reich. You're talking about Nazi Germany. I mean, he wrote around the time Nazi Germany was happening. And I think his work is more prescient than ever because of, you know, so many people, of course, make comparisons to our soft totalitarianism as Nazi Germany, which it isn't yet. But of course, it has the foundation to go really badly because the people are robots and are nasty and mean. It's like, look at America. Look at all these fucking reality shows where we just watch each other torture each other, basically. It's like, there's this really sick movie called, God Bless America, about these like two liberals that go around and like fucking, like, they're having this conversation, but they actually like pick up guns and go like fucking shoot like hate mongers the whole movie. It's really bizarre and totally like wrong.
Yeah.
And like it totally missed the mark, but it was also like, it expressed a rage that I appreciated because it was like, yeah, I'm fucking pissed too. I'm going to go on some list. I'm already on a list because my name is already John McGuire, and there's a John McGuire, I guess, in ISIS or something.
Oh, like, really?
A Canadian white guy named John McGuire. So it's like, whatever.
I'm, oh, you're fucked, man. Yeah, you're fucked. Nah, it's all right, man. No, they don't care, man. It's like they don't even have to mess with us. They would catch more flack if they actually did something to us. Like, at this point, it's just so obvious. It's a foregone conclusion. It's just, there's no court that'll prosecute him because the judges don't want to end up scandalized. And it's like, it may be worse than Nazi Germany at this point because they've got so much surveillance technology and it's so pervasive.
It's a different form of control, for sure. So I also wonder, does it really ever have to go to a final solution? Because, like, things are already very, like, the way it operates, like, there's a value to keeping the pigs alive.
Yeah.
Like, we're valuable alive. We don't realize how valuable we are, and that's why we work for, like, $10 an hour or whatever, you know, shit. Or small wage. It's ridiculous. And what I was saying, I forgot to, I lost my train of thought, but I was saying, like, I feel the rage of someone like the Unabomber, you know, who I've read and who is, I mean, everyone knows his story. He was highly, highly educated, so it shouldn't surprise anyone that his writing is quite coherent and his reasoning is quite coherent, and that anyone who reads beyond the propaganda of the mass media would probably hold many of the opinions of Ted Kaczynski, but they would never read his book, and they would never even, like, think that, oh my God, the enemy is in me. Like, what my society tells me is bad, it's like, what, that's actually what I'm feeling, what I'm motivated by. It's this deep... There's this guy named Alfred Adler. You can tell the Unabomber was highly motivated by Alfred Adler, who really spoke of human drives as like a drive for power. Although the Unabomber put it in more humane terms, he defined power as like, hey, what is your passion really? I mean, really, he was talking about human passion, not power. I think they were all missing the point.
Yeah. But well, they're similar, he's like,
yeah, I mean, it's the same thing, right? It's all just, God, language, like you're saying, I don't know how to communicate this in words because I haven't really, it's just like language is fucking limiting. It's so limiting. And so I use these distinctions, but they mean nothing.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, we're, our power is stunted. It's stunted in the society, and that's what we are striving for, you know? Whoever has critiques for Adler, it's like, that's still, I mean, that's a fundamental drive. It's like, we need agency and to fulfill our passions. And when that gets stunted, which is what, like you said, all this surveillance and all this, like, elitism, especially like think of credit reports and like what that means for, like, you know, if you're not on, have a good credit report, you're really like on the outs of what it means to be on the inside of society, right? And like mine, for example, is terrible, and so I'm on the outs of society in so many ways. I don't have access to like a lifestyle that most people my age do. I say most, even though that's not true, because like when I really think about it, no, most people don't have that lifestyle, but like what people my age strive for that I don't give a fuck about anymore because I know it's like a trap.
Yeah, but I
don't have access to it. It's weird.
Well, I mean, it's the tax code. I mean, some people know the code and some people don't. And there's like, you know, boarding schools and Ivy Leagues where I'm sure they learn the code just fine. And they learn certain portions of the code that are actually extra secret. And it's like all there in black and white. But I mean, like people are educated so damn Sesame Street. And the world is like hardcore black and white. And you got to be, you know, it's not emojis and shit. And I mean, oh, damn, it's just, you know, I don't want to be some hardcore Nazi about it. And I'm not, you know, I like things abstract and like far out, you know. But it's like you got to have a certain type of like diligence about just your conception more than like it starts from the inside out. It does. Like it is within. And it's like, you gotta stoke the fire. Like most people, like zombies are so popular because there's so many damn walking dead around. And that's, right. that's a real thing. It's like, you don't have to like actually like fatally die to be like, to have no, you know, creative, forward, productive motive. And it's like, everybody thinks it's like a pleasure pursuit or it's arbitrary. And it doesn't matter if we get to space or if we find out what's out there. You know, I, you know, have a larger TV screen or, I mean, augmented reality. I mean, we were talking about this a lot in Olympia. I mean, augmented reality is terrifying in terms of how much it will forfeit the means of existence.
So what do you think about space? You mentioned space a couple times, and I guess what is your view of space? Like, where are we going there? What is the point? Because people I like to read, like Tim Leary and Robert Anton Wilson, that a lot of people like to read, of course, but yeah. I don't read all their shit, and I focus on certain things, and a lot of their intersection points are beyond terrestrial living and beyond terrestrial thinking. And so they say that like their evolution of consciousness is to prepare us for space and to prepare us for what that means to be like an intergalactic post-terrestrial creature. Like, you need a certain different type of maturity and different sense of things in your place in the universe. And I think you said, like, well, what we've been talking about, we need to lay the groundwork for that sort of intelligence. And that's why I am still in this game. And it's like, I had a lot of ups and downs, and I'm still fucking in it.
Oh, yeah, I'm in it.
That's what it's about. I mean, that's what it's about. And we're all in it. And I mean, yeah, that's what it's about. It's like, I was just watching Bill Hicks, and he's like, the only thing I care about is evolving the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, evolving the ideas and, like, laying the groundwork. He said, had this awesome thing. He's saying, Wouldn't it be a creative idea if the drug czar wasn't a fucking cop, but was like a recovering addict and had compassion and was able to like build that into legislation and his arguments and so on, or her arguments?
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's something so small. It's like, that doesn't even come out of people's lips. It's just like, oh, this czar is a Republican. Oh, this czar is a whatever, a Democrat. It's like, there's partisanship. It's not even like, who is this person really? Are they a corporate goon? Are they like a public goon? Or are they like a real human being that's done work in the world and helped people? They're never people that have done work in the world meaningfully.
No, the institutions theoretically could be functional, but at this point they're so far gone. Like the drug czar should basically not even exist. But if there is
right,
one,
I mean, what is it exactly? I mean, like, how's that? Let's go beyond that. It's just like, how about it doesn't fucking exist? But
yeah,
you know, it's just like, it's interesting.
Yeah, have it also be the Secretary of Education and the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And work out some sort of mass plan to reorient these things from being like inherently abusive and degenerate, and have people distinguish between what is degenerate and what is actually potentially like invaluable to human understanding. Because I've heard it kind of described before, like meditation can get you anywhere that like psychedelics can get you. But, like, it'll get you there in a straight, deliberate path. Like, it takes intent and certain things to really meditate and get in that zone. When the psychedelics is like a rocket ship or, like, buckshot out of a shotgun. And it's, like, it's dangerous. And, yeah, you know, I mean, it does have some inherent dangers. I'm not saying it's all, like, fun and games, but, like...
No, but everything is dangerous.
Yeah.
Let's be real about it. Yeah. I mean, seriously, who drives to work in the fucking morning?
Exactly.
How many people that kills versus LSD?
Great point. In the certain nooks and crannies that maybe, you know, the buckshot may get into that nobody would ever deliberately think to go in, is kind of like the point of having all these people with all their individual experiences trying to mine out these gems of, like, thought that makes people, like, enthused about, oh my god, what just happened? Like, we're getting to the point where everything is so damn uniform and conformist to that unity. Like, oh, well, it's all one. It's like, why does anybody even want to have a different thought? My opinion's just like your opinion. And it's like, it's such a danger to humanity in itself, let alone the society we live in. Because it is an American thing. I'm not, like, I'm sorry, world, if you're listening to this. I don't mean any, you know, I mean, I'm sure other people are living like human beings. But, I mean, what they've turned Americans into, it's really, like, antithetical to a republic and what it takes to really even be aware in general. Like, I've been thinking of... like the system, I mean, it's totally an arbitrary system, but it's helpful. Of, you can take 15 triangles in an array, like a, you know, tetragrammaton or something, add one row, and take the 15 executive branches of government, or, cabinets, executive cabinets, you know, treasury, education, defense, everybody, and like, apply it to your own way of thinking and see exactly how far you can get with, like, adjacent lines. Like, when, you know, the Secretary of the Treasury meets the Secretary of Defense. Like, that node's going to have to be something financial to do with defense. And where that meets education, it's like, you're going to have to figure out some way to get some sort of, like, and really, like, toss and turn around, like, the different types of far out things that, like, could be done with executive power, instead of thinking about, like, just, like, it's, like, a foregone conclusion that defense spending is going to be, like, you know, however many trillions of dollars and however many percentage of the budget. It's like, maybe there's other ways to defend than with defense. Or maybe there's other ways to educate, or, you know, there's other forms of compensation. And I'm not a socialist or anything, but, you know, monetary debt is an inflationary, quantitative easing, endless money pit that like our competitors in the world are trying to break free of right now in Russia, China, etc. And it's either going to be war because we can't contain them anymore and we don't want to lose control, or we're going to go with it because our game is up. Like that, there's no more, like you can't pump any more money into the thing. Like there's no more bailouts. Like it's really like a hysterical type of, once you snap into the realization that like it can't just be something we deal with tomorrow, or I don't know. Like, I mean, I can snap back into the moment a lot, and I see it like, you know, oh, you know, back to tomorrow, I'll go to work, and it's just however they get people back in the trance. But it's like, I don't know, maybe once things all fall, like there's no more money at the ATM, there's no more gas at the pumps, maybe people will really, you know, the humanity will shine and people will come to the forefront. I don't know.
I mean, that's, you have to hope for that.
Oh, I hope
personally, so. I hope for it. I hope for it too. And I know enough of how the universe can work in beautiful ways and synchronistic ways and like ways that are advantageous for people that I do hold out that fool's hope, as bad as I know everything is and as deeply I could dig into it and get into the absolute darkness of it because it's fucking bleak. But I think it will turn out okay, I really do. And like if post-terrestrial existence is part of that, if space is part of that, I mean, I'm cool with that. It's like whatever we need to figure shit out.
We gotta get there though, man. We gave up on trying to get there.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from Syncbook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com. I'm not afraid to